Hey y'all, welcome to a brief episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. I just want to talk about a couple of things today. The first thing is this idea, and this is loosely referencing the Kentucky case, but I'm not going to go into too many specifics because it's very graphic and I tend to focus on issues rather than people, as we should all know. But the point is, the idea of convicting someone of assault when the crime was actually a murder is an example, I would say, of the logical fallacy known as false equivalence. Because an assault is not the same thing as a murder. Obviously, anyone who has not been living in the bottom of the Mariana Trench without a pressure suit knows that murder is when you intentionally take a human life. Like, that's one of the first kind of things we learn about crime-wise growing up. Once we're old enough to understand what death is and that death is final. And, like, in the Ten Commandments, there's literally a commandment specifically dedicated to murder. Assault is much more minor. Assault is just when you intentionally hurt someone in some way. There are different types of assault. There's types that I won't talk about here because they're unspeakably heinous. That's where you hear the word assault used a lot. But technically, an assault can be hitting someone in the face, throwing things at them, pushing, shoving them. A lot of things that we would all agree are much, much more minor than murder. You know, if I hit you in the face, you're probably not going to die, most likely. But I have assaulted you. I have not killed you. So to say that assault is murder, or that murder and assault are the same thing, which is essentially what you're saying when you convict someone of assault when what they've actually committed is murder. That's like saying that accidentally burning your finger with a match is the same thing as setting your house on fire or setting a whole city block on fire. Very different things. Accidentally burning your hand with a match or on a stove or with a candle is obviously much, 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 much less of a big deal than setting an entire city block on fire. Even though they technically both involve setting something on fire, or at least burning something with fire. So this is why I think we should eliminate plea bargaining. You should not be allowed to plead down to something less major than your actual crime. You should still get to be able to plead guilty or not guilty, obviously, to have a chance at a trial. But you should have to plead guilty or not guilty to the crime you actually committed. So if you committed a murder, then you should have to plead to murder. I mean, if there's other charges too, then you know, we can take those on a case-by-case basis if they're, you know, things that were tacked on or other offenses that happened in the same incident or whatever. But generally, we should not have plea bargaining. You should not be able to just plead down to something less than than the crime you actually committed. If you robbed a bank, you should not be able to just plead guilty to petty theft like you stole 20 bucks from Walmart. Because you didn't. You robbed a bank. Two totally different things. They're both theft, yes, but not the same type of theft if you stole $10,000 from a bank versus if you stole $20 from Walmart. So plea bargaining is dishonest and unethical, I believe, and so therefore we should get rid of it. How exactly would that happen? I'm not entirely sure yet. It would probably be gradual. It would probably be a gradual phase out for being practical here because people are so used to it and whatnot. And there might be ongoing cases that involve it. Actually, I'm sure there are. So those have to be resolved, but it should be a gradual phase out, like a 5-year phase out where we have stages and plans and dates and all the whole nine yards. But this has to go. It's extremely dishonest and offensive, and we have to get rid of it if we want to have a functioning legal system that actually punishes people for the crimes they commit and not for some made-up fictional crime that they didn't commit, or that it would be a stretch to call their actual offense, like it'd be a stretch to call a murder an assault. For example. Now, moving on, the other thing I want to talk about here is this fear-mongering about the president firing people in a shutdown, like using a shutdown as a time to fire members of the federal government. I would actually support that. You know why? It would actually solve three problems in one. So first, obviously, it would shrink the size of the federal government workforce, which would then make the government less bloated, and requiring less funding because you don't have to pay as many people. You don't you, your labor costs are lower, so you have, you don't have as many line items on your budget. Now, I know an employee is more than just a line item, but if we're talking specifically in funding terms, if you have 50,000 employees versus 500, your labor costs are going to be very, very different. And then, actually, I guess the federal government firings would solve four problems because you have that problem of funding and efficiency concerns are being solved because your labor costs and the amount of people in your government are extremely slimmed down, especially if he fired as many people as I think he should, which he probably wouldn't, even if he did fire people. But that's not relevant right now. The second thing is it would get rid of a bunch of employees that probably do not support a lot of his agenda, which do I support every item on Trump's agenda? No. But if he's the president and he is in charge, he's the chief executive, then it only makes sense that he wouldn't want all his people under him to hate everything he stands for. Like, that only makes logical sense. Now, sure, political loyalty should not supersede actual qualifications. If I break my leg and I have to go to the hospital, I'm not going to care if my doctor voted the same way I did. I'm going to care that my doctor can fix my leg. But when we're talking about like bureaucrats, people working from home or in offices, people who are directly responsible for carrying out what he wants for the federal government, then it only makes sense, especially from his perspective, that he would want to make sure that they, even if they don't agree with every item on his agenda, that they at least don't diametrically oppose everything that he supports. So, especially from his perspective, that's a second problem you'd solve. A third problem that you would solve is, everybody's freaking out. What are we gonna do if we get rid of all the illegals? Who's gonna clean the toilets? Who's gonna pick the crops? Which it's very telling that that's the first argument that some people go to when you talk about cracking down on illegal immigration. But anyway, who's gonna pick the crops and clean the toilets? Well, if we very much slim down the size of the federal government, and some of these people can't find a job doing anything else, Maybe some of them will step up to the plate. Now, I know that people will say, oh, well, Americans don't want to do that job. Hunger is a great motivator, as my dad always says. So if you have no other option and you're starving to death, you might pick up a shovel or put on some gloves and clean toilets. Now, it's not glamorous work, but somebody's got to do it. So that would, at least in theory, solve that problem. And it would also solve a related problem. You hear a lot about how there's more jobs than people. And if we get rid of some of these federal jobs, especially large chunks of them, well, then there won't be more jobs than people anymore, because there won't be as many jobs. So then your unemployment is better because you don't have as many jobs that need filling. So even if you have less people from, say, deporting illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, you still would have less jobs that need to be filled, especially if the people who are now out of a federal job have to do some of the jobs that illegals used to do, or if the people that are out of a federal job now are having to work in the private sector in some way. You can have private businesses having an easier time finding people, especially if they need, you know, office workers and stuff, which I know, I'm sure that illegals didn't do that job quite as much as some of these more blue-collar jobs, because office work would require more English proficiency. But that's not to say that it never happened. So if, say, you have someone who came here illegally and was working in an office and they get deported, well, then if a federal worker's position is terminated during a shutdown, for example, that federal worker could then take over the office position that the illegal was doing when she was deported, or he. So, in short, if Trump actually did start firing federal workers, say, during a shutdown, it would solve four problems. The first one being mainly from his perspective, that it would clear out people that are opposed with every bone in their body to everything he stands for, which, as a chief executive, I would think he would want to make sure that the people directly responsible for enforcing what you have outlined, the platform that you have, the policy priorities that you have, you'd want to make sure that those people don't hate your guts. That only makes sense. Again, political loyalty should not supersede qualification, but it does make sense from his perspective to want to clear out people that disagree with everything he stands for. Now, does that mean that then anyone who replaces them, or anyone who is left standing if the position is terminated entirely but others are allowed to remain, should then necessarily have to agree with everything he stands for or sign a loyalty oath or any of that? No. I wouldn't support that. I mean, you shouldn't hitch your political worldview to a person. You should hitch it to a set of principles, like I do. I don't agree with everything he does. I agree with some of it. Yes, not all of it. Anyway, the other three problems are things that are less just from his perspective and more things in general that cutting the size of the federal government would solve. The first one being that if you eliminate a lot of federal positions, it would fill a lot of the, at least in theory, it would fill a lot of the jobs left behind by deporting illegals, especially if these federal workers can't find another job. Because, I mean, you know, hunger is a good motivator. You gotta feed yourself somehow. So even if you don't want to clean toilets, I don't want to clean toilets. But if you don't want to and you have no other choice, well, I guess that's what you're doing until you can find something better. I don't envy you, but that's just the way it is. Samson had to grind in the mill, so I mean, you can clean a toilet in the 21st century with air conditioning. Granted, he got himself there because of his own actions, but that's a topic for another day. The point is, that if we're deporting illegals, which I think we should deport every illegal immigrant, that's just my opinion. If you can't follow the laws to come here, then you don't need to be here. But you know, if we deport all of them, then all these jobs that are left behind that allegedly no American wants to do, well, someone would have to do them. And if we shrink the size of the federal government, then some of these former federal workers would have no other choice, especially if all the jobs they want are full, than to fill in the void. The third problem that this would solve is that, from a purely funding and logistical perspective, financial and logistical perspective, sorry, it's been a long day, the federal government would become less bloated. It would have less funding items because you wouldn't have as many federal workers, so you'd have lower labor costs. And finally, it would solve the problem of the unemployment numbers and the job market having more jobs than people. Because if you don't have as many jobs because you've shrunk the federal government for good, then you no longer have more jobs than people, or if you do, it's to a lesser extent than you do now. Obviously, it's a math problem. So, thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode or considered it to be food for thought. You can find this podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Audible, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page at Jesse's Fireside Chats and on X at JFSCPod. And if you feel so inclined, you can email us at jessiesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS, firesidechats@gmail.com. If you'd like to be a guest, please reach out, and I'll be happy to talk to you about logistics and subject matter and everything else. And we have a coffee page, so no pressure. But if you'd like to leave a small donation to help support us, that's kofi.com/jessiesfiresidechats. And please pass this along to anybody you know that might be interested. And I hope you'll come back next time. Thank you and have a blessed day.